Blog Talk Radio.
This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast, on a Wednesday night, September 17th, 2014. I'm Dre, he's Jay. Jay's a little under the weather, don't know how he's going to sound. He certainly didn't sound well last night, that's why we couldn't come to you live last night. But here we are, 10 o'clock Central Time this evening on Wednesday, and Jay, you hanging in there, buddy?
Yeah, I'm what's left of Jay tonight. I'm doing okay. I'm hanging in there. I've got the handy dandy mute button here for myself, so you don't have to hear me hacking and coughing tonight. So
now, people across most of the country are thinking it's the middle of September. What could have possibly come over you to make you this under the weather? So, give me a little example of what's going on up there in central Wisconsin. What's the weather like?
Well, it's fall. I mean, we've had freezing temperatures here a few times already. I know that's not something you want to hear, but it's coming. It's definitely coming. And yeah, I remember about 3-4 days ago, my wife and our two kids and I, we went to the store, and you know, we hadn't been to the store for a little bit, you know, because we kind of stocked up here for the time off here with the baby, and everybody at the store was hacking and coughing and wheezing, and it was just like, oh my God, we got to get out of this place. Well, myself and my daughter both got really sick, and my wife just got a little bit, but fortunately the baby's healthy, so it must be all those little baby immunities.
Right. Well, good to hear you hanging in there. You do sound a lot better than you did last night. You definitely couldn't have done a show last night. Now, the interesting thing is I'm healthy, but I'm under the weather knowledge-wise as far as all that happened in week two. I watched the local games that came on. I was home for the game Sunday, and I watched the primetime games, and that's about it. All the other games that happened, I really never had a chance to see what was going down because I had a crazy work week and home week, just nonstop running back and forth. It was incredible how busy I was. I would have normally taken advantage of today to catch up because this would be my normal day off, except I was called in for 9 hours of mandatory overtime. So I had no chance to do any kind of looking back on week two. I literally went from work to home right out to the bowling alley and now back here. So I'm going to be relying on you to really cover the games that I didn't get a chance to see. So I don't know where exactly you want to start, but I know what we both predicted and hardly anyone else across the country was thinking would possibly happen, and that's the Chicago Bears going to San Francisco and pulling off a pretty big upset.
Well, first of all, you never – don't fuck with the Bear Whisperer.
Do not fuck with the Bear Whisperer. I tried to take you down, man, but you were too strong. The force was strong with this one.
Well, it's funny because that was one of the big upsets, and then the other big upset of the week that I called was San Diego and Seattle. And those two kind of tie together for me in this respect. When you watch San Diego beating Seattle, if you looked at almost all of those touchdown passes that Phillip Rivers threw, this goes to what you always talk about too, and I'll tie this all up neatly for you, is he throws those balls in there with just perfect touch. All those touchdowns that he threw to Antonio Gates, the only guy who was going to catch that ball was Antonio Gates.
Yeah.
That's about the only way that you're going to beat that Seattle team is with perfectly placed passes. And then you flip that around to the Bears and the Niners, and we've got your boy Kaepernick.
Oh.
Zero touch.
Zero touch.
Just throwing these laser beams, which is great, but they all started ending up in the arms of Bears defenders. Most notably, this Kyle Fuller, this high draft pick of theirs.
Rookie.
Their top pick. And he made two really nice plays. Turned that game around. And Jay Cutler was finding Brandon Marshall left and right. And, you know, it was sort of a contrast in those two games that you had Rivers just expertly dropping these balloons in to Antonio Gates. And then you flip that around and you watch Kaepernick just trying to gun everything and how it wasn't working. And this is why I know I'm not particularly high on San Francisco. I'm still high on Seattle because it took a perfect game down there in the heat to beat them. And they were still in the game. It's not like San Diego just, you know, blew their doors off. But,
San Diego doesn't have the defense to blow anyone's doors off.
No, so I'm not worried about Seattle, you know, even though they're a 1-1 team now, and a lot of teams in that division are, a lot of teams around football right now are 1-1. It's only been 2 weeks. You got your handful of undefeateds, you got your handful of all defeated, and then you got your 1-1 team. So there's really nothing that you can say too much one way or the other about what you've seen so far. But there are a few teams that have looked really good. And definitely, I'd say the best team I've seen so far has been Cincinnati.
Quite impressive. Atlanta had no chance from what I saw, the couple of highlights that I saw in that game.
Well, they just, everything Atlanta tried to do, if they tried to blitz, they got beat. If they tried to play the pass, they would get run on. This Jeremy Hill, this rookie running back, had a great game. Giovanni Bernard was killing him in the receiving portion out of the backfield. And wasn't quite the effort I was expecting out of Atlanta. They just looked like, I think they really just ran into a vastly superior team. And that's two impressive wins for Cincinnati now.
Yeah. It's early in the season, but they definitely look like one of the more formidable teams in the league. Now, the problem, of course, that I've had with Cincinnati is it just whatever happens when the page turns and the playoffs come about, whatever magic they have disappears. So I don't, you know, I haven't seen anything to make me think otherwise yet. I did not pick them to go very far in the playoffs this year. This is your Super Bowl team. You have the Bengals representing the AFC in the Super Bowl this year. So have you seen enough in the first 2 weeks to think that this time it's going to work out? They're going to flip that switch. You believed it before the season starts. I guess so far so good. There's nothing you can really say against them at this point in the season.
Yeah. If you want to crown them, crown their ass. Now, if you crown a team after 2 weeks, it makes no sense. This is the trouble that you always run into though, with those teams that have that postseason bugaboo, you know, where you talk about that quarterback who can't win in the postseason. This is all that they're going to talk about until Cincinnati goes and actually does something in the playoffs. This is all you're going to hear. Doesn't matter how good they are in the regular season. You got to actually go out and prove it in the playoffs. And I think just about everybody assumes Cincinnati is going to be a playoff team. I don't think there's anybody who really doesn't see them unless they have some major, you know, injury issues happen. I think, you know, a lot of folks pretty much agree Cincinnati's playoff caliber team. So we've seen this with a lot of the teams. I remember with Aaron Rodgers, you know, here in Wisconsin, after he lost his first couple times in the playoffs, all of a sudden it was, whoa, can't win the big one. So it's all you hear through the whole regular season, no matter how good they are, is, yeah, but what are they going to do in the playoffs? Well, and Andy Dalton's in that spot now. You're never going to get the respect you deserve until you go and you earn it. And that's what they're going to have to do. But they look pretty good. They're two really nice wins to start the season. One of the better-looking teams out there right now.
Absolutely. We are here for the next hour. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on week two or anything else, our phone number is area code 646-595-4534. That's our phone number every week. In much less detail, the podcast, if you're listening to us on iTunes or Stitcher or any other app and you want to listen to us live, our website to listen live is blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail. You can email us with any thoughts or comments, and you would send that to inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at IMLDDre. Jason's at IMLDJTG. And our picks are up on the blog every weekend. Inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com is where you go to look at our picks. But since I was 5-11 this week and Jason was 6-10, I would suggest that you don't want to go look at our picks from last week because they're quite ugly overall.
Well, that's the typical week two move, right? I mean, it's very rare, no matter how you do, good or bad, in week one, week two, you always think everything that you learned in week one is going to apply in week two. And more often than not, it shits all over you. I mean, it's just the way it goes, you know. We had a few tough losses. We had that tough loss on Monday night. We got hooked by the Jets.
Yep.
You know, there were some that we just obviously could not read correctly. Jacksonville springs to mind.
Oh, boy.
Tampa somehow finding a way to lose to Austin Davis.
That's two backup quarterbacks they've lost to now.
Wow. Well, what are they going to do when they actually play a real quarterback this week?
Probably win, because that's how it goes, you know?
That would be perfect. Oakland, yeah, we saw that one coming.
Ugh.
So, yeah, it was a rough week. It was rough. Although I do believe going 5-11 upped your win percentage. So there's...
Good Lord.
There's got to be some positive, you know. It dragged me about down to almost 500, but at least it's pulling you. You might be over 300 now. We're getting close.
I'm off to a 9-22 start on the season. It's just, it's awful. I don't know. No, I'm not over 300. I'm at 290 now with that.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, you still picked up 23 percentage points.
Yeah. It's ugly. There's no way to sugarcoat it. It's just ugly so far. And I'm really mad because I liked my picks in week two. I felt good about them before I made them, and then
the difference between us for the week was you losing on Thursday night. Otherwise, we split the rest of the week.
Right. Yeah. I thought Pittsburgh would come out and have some fight against the Ravens and all their distractions, and it didn't quite work out for me.
Well, so you know, all the talk around the league is about all of these sponsors that are dropping these guys. You know, they're dropping Adrian Peterson. You've got all these, big corporations, not necessarily dropping the NFL, but cautiously, reprimanding the NFL, like, hey, you guys better watch yourselves. That's
it's
fine.
Weird. It's almost like they're sending out signals, like, hey, psst, over here, look, we're not playing. We're not playing. We see you. See, hey, they're doing a little eye thing with their two fingers. See, we see you. We're looking. Yeah. We're looking.
And basically, they're just telling them to get their shit together.
Right.
But through all of that, I did find through all of this a opportunity for marketing for one player in particular, and he's already on a lot of commercials. But I figure this would be perfect. And that would be for RG3 to start hawking the Life Alert bracelets or necklaces.
Because he's fallen and he can't get up.
Yes. Perfect, because he doesn't get touched and just crumples to the turf. And all, you know, while he's laying there on the ground, he could, you know, with the little thing on his chest, you know, beep, 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 you know.
The camera zooms in on his button.
And I can't get up. You know, we're sending help immediately, Mr. Griffin. What is with this guy? I mean, he's very fragile. He's like Mr. Glass in the movie Unbreakable. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie, where he's like born with broken bones.
No,
and
I have not seen
it's,
that.
I highly recommend that movie. Very good movie. But I'm trying to, I had a nickname picked out for him. But I forgot it being in the cloud that I've been in all week. So I know I'll remember it here at some point.
Yeah.
But
we'll come
just,
to you.
I mean, he'll be, I mean, I can't imagine what it must be like just being around him. Does he just get injured shopping for groceries?
Oh!
Or,
yeah,
you know.
My Achilles! Oh!
But it has nothing to do with what he's actually doing. So it's got to just be some random injury.
There's a cleanup in aisle 3. Robert Griffin slipped and looked like he tore his Achilles on some water. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, is he going to, like, you know, be commentating for the next few weeks and then just suddenly get, like, Lockjaw or something in the studio?
Going to tear his larynx.
I've never seen so many non-contact injuries befall one guy. I feel really bad for him. And then you have his replacement come in and just shred the Jaguars, which, I mean, isn't saying a whole lot.
That's why you should feel bad for him, because Kirk Cousins came in and just lit it up.
And instantaneously, the report started coming out that this is Jay Gruden's guy. He prefers Kirk Cousins in that offense to RG3. Not quite sure if that was meant to come out or if that was sort of one of those, you know, like little back channel communication from the coach to the media, you know, hey, get this out there, trying to send a signal to the management and the ownership. But I could very easily see RG3 come back, not play, and find himself trade bait. And he could be an Oakland Raider. Wouldn't that just be perfect?
Oh, no.
Isn't that where these guys go to die?
Don't wish that on him. Jeez.
I'm telling you, he just gets hurt. That's all he does. That's his only move.
That's quite a lot of injuries without anyone touching you for someone, you know, for a 23-year-old, you know, to go down twice like that with significant injuries too, not just, you know, pulling a hamstring or something. One time he tears his ACL off and now he pops his ankle out of socket. It's just, he's, you know, you're just going to walk along the street and, you know, going to tear your foot up, tripping over a manhole or something, or cracking the sidewalk. It's crazy. He's had all these issues with his attitude as well, because even before this, you know, there was the, I remember the all-in for week one campaign before last season, because he had the injury in the playoffs in 2012, and he's getting ready for the 2013 season, and he's got just this big-ass ad campaign just talking him up and hyping him up before he touches the field in this big comeback, and, you know, just sending the hype through the roof. And I understand that that's, you know, the ad agency putting that together. He didn't come up with that himself, but his attitude has embraced all of that. He seems like the type that really thinks he's that good. He thinks he's, you know, a future Hall of Famer. He absolutely thinks he's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, despite having won nothing so far. And that attitude seems to have always been there. It was there before this season, even though there was no big ad campaign. He still displayed this attitude. You can only describe it as arrogance. He thinks he's better than he actually has proven to be. And the really sad part about it is I don't think anyone thinks he's nearly as good as he was before that first injury, because before that first injury he was turning the corner and displaying, like, world-class speed, and clearly he's not doing that anymore. It remains to be seen whether he ever would be that good again. He was working his way back up to that possibly, but no one really knew for sure. Now we got this on the other leg, the dislocated ankle. I think there's a pretty good chance he'll never be as good as he was that rookie year, and he'll never be nearly as good as his attitude says that he should.
Well, and you know, it's always the case with these running quarterbacks where their game is so dependent on the mobility they never really seem to develop as pocket passers. And he's, in the games that I've seen so far last year and this, and even the first game this year, his pocket presence, his pocket awareness, his field vision stink. And it's amazing after he gets hurt, that same offensive line, same receivers, Kirk Cousins can drop back in the pocket and just shred a team.
Maybe he's the better pocket quarterback after all.
Yeah, I mean, there's still something to be said for a guy who can take a snap and drop back and scan the field and not have to make all the plays with his legs, because one thing, you're not going to put yourself at risk of just getting jacked up every time you run with the ball. And, you know, there still is something to be said for a guy who can take it and throw it from the pocket.
You still need that. There's one small reason that I don't want Kirk Cousins to succeed ultimately, and it's a really small, petty reason. I admit it's petty. It's only because it will actually prove the Shanahan boys right, because they move heaven and high and hell, and go through all hell and high water, I'm mixing metaphors there, to draft RG3 as high as they did, and then came right back in the fourth round of that same draft to get Kirk Cousins, as if to say, yeah, we really love this RG3 kid, but maybe just in case we should get this backup as well. It's almost like they knew what was coming. It's almost like they saw this on the horizon. So I almost don't want Kirk Cousins to succeed just to prove the Shanahan's ultimately right, even though they're gone now. But I have a bad feeling Kirk Cousins is going to ultimately succeed, and RG3 will be shuttled out of town, like you said, maybe to Oakland or some other outpost that needs a quarterback. Actually, I kind of would love to see him down in Houston once they are through with Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think that young defense is just going to get better and better, and RG3 maybe can come in and light it up and excite the fan base down there.
Yeah, but it's going to be the same situation no matter where he goes. Is if you don't have a viable backup, you're screwed. I mean, that's the case for a lot of teams, but
you're calling him the new Michael Vick?
You know, it's too bad you already had the China doll taken with Matt Stafford. But Matt Stafford's been fairly durable the last couple seasons.
Yeah, he overcame that. Robert Griffin truly is the new China doll.
Yeah, well, Matt Stafford, first of all, is not a runner.
Right.
So he's a pocket passer. I mean, he has some mobility. Most of these guys all have to move around and move out of the pocket. But he's not a runner. So maybe he was just getting some fluky injuries, we probably just jinxed him now. But he's stayed relatively healthy now the last few years. It's RG3. It's not a matter of, you know, if but when.
Maybe RG3 can be paper mache. How about that?
We'll figure this one out. He definitely has this high opinion of himself, but he's on pace to the only Hall of Fame he's going to make it into is ours, and that's not good.
No, you don't want to be in that Hall of Fame necessarily.
No.
I'm still waiting to see in the future, will it bear out that Washington's defense actually is that improved that they could rally up for 10 sacks in one game like they did, or is the Jacksonville offensive line going to be that bad? Because if the Jacksonville offensive line is going to be that bad, they're a 1-15 team. That was horrible.
Yeah, and if that's truly the Jacksonville offensive line, wouldn't that make the case to not put Blake Bortles anywhere near the field?
Right.
Just let Chad Henne get destroyed. Yeah, just let Chad Henne get destroyed week after week after week until he just can't take it anymore.
You said that Cincinnati was very impressive starting out 2-0. And we've got a couple of teams that we thought were going to be impressive and be division champions starting out 0-2. So really quick, which one are you more worried about at this point, the New Orleans Saints or the Indianapolis Colts?
You know, I mean, honestly, I'm not worried about the Colts. We actually talked about this a little bit on our pick show, that the Colts, if you can go 0-2 anywhere in football, it's in the AFC South. I mean, really. So I'm not worried about the Colts. I shouldn't be worried about the Saints. That's two road losses by, 5 points?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, at, At Atlanta, I can understand because that's a tough divisional opponent. At Cleveland, you know.
Letting Bobby Hoyer rally back for a win on you? What?
Yeah, but you mean Brian Hoyer.
Yeah, not Bobby Hoying. Oh, I'm mixing my terrible Ohio quarterbacks there.
But I think Cleveland, other than that first half against the Steelers, has looked decent. They're not horrible. You know,
yeah.
And I don't care if it's the Saints on the road and the Saints aren't good on the road. The Saints are a good team. And Cleveland took care of business. I mean, they didn't dominate. They were up big early, blew the lead, but still, man, and it was funny because it was one of those after they missed an extra point. It was at that point in the game where I was like, oh, that's going to come back and that's going to get them. It just felt like, you know, underdog team always seems to find a way to lose a game. And stupid shit like missed extra points always seems to do it in. But I give Hoyer credit because he converted on that last drive, got him in. The Saints decided to just not cover anybody, and they were able to get that. Well, that's an impressive win for Cleveland.
It is. Put him in very good standing with the BCS.
Okay. I guess because the NFC South is a little bit tougher, there's more. I think there's just more quality teams in the NFC South than there are in the AFC South. I guess I have to be more worried about the Saints. What do you think?
I think I concur. Indy was very impressive in their first loss against Denver because Denver blew their doors off and the Colts could have and should have curled up in a ball and just, you know, lost by 30 and licked their wounds and went home. But they rallied back to lose only by 7 and yet another backdoor cover that we were on the bad end of in week 1. And then this Philadelphia game Monday night, the Colts look like the better team, even though Philadelphia probably by the numbers is the better team. They just wound up losing at the end because it was almost sort of a last team with the ball wins type situation. And, you know, that's tough. There's not much you can do about that. But when you're playing a team that talented offensively like the Eagles, then, yeah, you're going to get bit like that sometimes at the end. But, you know, Andrew Luck was killing the Eagles in the first three quarters, you know, killing them with hard counts, killing them with bootlegs to the right and throwing touchdowns. It's like Philadelphia never saw that before because he did it to them 3 times. And it's only because Philly has, you know, LeSean McCoy and Darren Sproles in the same backfield, which seems to be unfair, and Nick Foles very impressive in the comeback. Only because of that are the Eagles able to rally and catch the Colts late at the end of the game. So, yeah, I can't be too worried about the Colts because I don't think they looked bad in either one of their 2 losses. They just happen to have 2 losses. Saints kind of worry me, not just because of how much tougher their division is, but how they lost their games. Like, I thought the reason I have New Orleans as my Super Bowl pick is my NFC Super Bowl contender is because I thought their defense was loaded enough to keep them in games in which Drew Brees isn't, you know, playing his A game. And Drew Brees hasn't played his A game yet. He's has been very good, but he hasn't been great in either one of his 2 games. He normally isn't great out of the Superdome, but he's been arguably good enough to win these 2 games. And that defense has found a way to come up short both times against Atlanta. Like you said, it's easy to understand because of all the weapons that the Falcons have on offense. I'm stunned at how they lost this game to Cleveland. I didn't see the highlight of it, so I don't know exactly how they wound up losing, but I know enough that, you know, Brian Hoyer had to rally the Browns and lead a comeback on offense with I don't know who was his receivers and his running backs, and he did it. He got it done. He did enough to get them in field goal position to get the victory, and whatever the case is, why New Orleans defense allowed that to happen, it's definitely something to worry about. I would have never expected that to happen.
Yeah, so definitely agree with you there. It's tough, and it's weird because of that Monday night game. For the first three quarters of that game, I was more impressed with the Colts running backs than I was with the Eagles running backs, which I'd never thought I'd say. But yeah. Trent Richardson was running hard. He wasn't getting a ton of yards, but he was very physical, and it really seemed to be working. And as the game wore on, and the Eagles started coming back, I think you saw a little panic from the Colts.
You definitely saw it from Richardson, who fumbled, and Philadelphia right back on offense tied the game at 20 at that point. And I definitely marked that down in my notes. Like, here was the moment, the big turning point. Indy at the 17-6 halftime lead. They're smothering Philadelphia, and here comes Philadelphia with a touchdown. The Philadelphia tempo finally seemed to be catching up and wearing out the Indianapolis defense, which is, you know, expected, but still the Colts on offense should be able to answer and maintain a double-digit lead, but Richardson fumbles, coughs it up, and lets Philly come right back and tie it, and that was the big turning point to me.
Yeah, because up until that point, on the ground, through the air, the Colts had completely dominated that game.
Yeah.
And on defense, which I know I was surprised by, that they had really done a good job of clamping down on the Eagles, who are just, I mean, they're as wide open. They're the most wide open team in football.
They seem to be. That's a really tough team to cover sideline to sideline. And then they add Darren Sproles, which, like I said, just seems fucking unfair.
And that's 2 weeks in a row that he's really been sort of that X factor for them.
Indeed. So keep an eye on the Eagles. They might be ready to riot again this season.
I think we both have the Eagles winning that division. I don't think either one of us had any other one of those. Yeah, I don't think there was. I mean, just that's almost like a default pick because the rest of that division is just garbage.
Yeah, you know, you can't go with Eli and the Giants. You can't go with Romo and the Cowboys, and you can't go with RG3 and the Redskins. It definitely was a default pick.
Well, and it's funny because we talked about Eli saying basically that he's good for two picks every week, and I believe he came through with two picks.
He sure did.
I
wrote down the turnover situation for the Giants, and I didn't see much of the highlights of the Arizona Giants game, but I do have Eli with two picks, Rashad Jennings with a fumble. The New York Giants. Here, this is how bad that loss was to the Arizona Cardinals. I'm home Sunday, a rare home day for me, a day off from work. I see the news in the morning about an hour, hour and a half before game time that Interception Santa is going to pack his sleigh in and not play at all. You know, I was keeping up with that injury throughout the week, the nerve thing, as his head coach called it, Bruce Arians. They shut him down before the game. They say Drew Stanton is going to suit up and start in this game. I ran to every one of my fantasy leagues, and I picked up the Giants' defense, which was available, because I thought the Giants' defense was a little underrated anyway, and now they're going to play Drew Stanton. Then I turn around to our Buster League and pick up Drew Stanton. I was all in on the New York Giants on this day. I picked them before Carson Palmer was ruled out of this game. You also picked the Giants. But when I heard that news, I just went all in. I thought there's no fucking way the Giants are going to have their home opener against Drew Stanton and a West Coast team coming in, playing a noon Eastern time game, beat up with injuries before the season even began, coming off a late Monday night game on 6 days rest. There were so many factors going against Arizona, and there was still one big factor out there that we did not consider, which is it's still Eli Manning.
Yeah, and I mean, what we were really panning, what we were counting on was that, you know, we knew he was going to be good for his two picks. Well, excuse me, I had to mute myself there for a moment.
Wow, I heard the wind up for that one, boy.
Yeah.
That was a powerful one. I could hear it and didn't even hear it, but I could still hear it.
It's okay. I didn't want to blow your eardrums out.
Thank you. I appreciate.
But we expected Carson Palmer to go out there and, you know, throw some picks. And then, yeah, I saw the same reports you saw. I was like, oh, that's a win for us. You know, no Carson Palmer. It's Drew Stanton. But I guess we should have learned with these guys who haven't thrown a pass in years after the Derek Anderson from week one. If you're playing a shitty team, it doesn't matter.
Apparently it doesn't matter.
And the Giants, they're Jacksonville bad right now. I don't think any Tom Coughlin hot seat talk is gonna save them.
Yeah, I don't know how you turn it around after this.
Well, they've got one receiver out there. Everybody knows it. I don't trust... you trust Rashad Jennings a lot more than I do. I don't know if that trust is waning a little bit.
No, it's got to be.
But they have Victor Cruz, and that's it. And all these other teams are going to know that. The Giants are going to try to force-feed him the ball. And I think this is where Eli's throwing himself into trouble. I don't think he has any faith in his receivers, and I just don't think anybody on that team is particularly good right now. That's a bad football team.
Everyone thought the Chicago Bears were going to be a bad football team on Sunday night, and somehow they went into San Francisco and pulled off the upset victory. I don't know about you. You're not nearly as big a Bears fan as me. You're not really a Bears fan at all, but good God, that was fun to watch as a Bears fan. That was some fun shit. Just to see it come together the way we thought it would. That, you know, Colin Kaepernick trying to gun the ball, you know, all around the field with no touch, with very little accuracy. It was bad. He was just bad. The Bears were limping in. You know, Brandon Marshall, Alshon Jeffrey, both really severely banged up to the point where the Bears are activating rookie wide receivers off of their practice squad the day before the game, making everyone wonder, oh shit, are they actually going to try to play this game without Brandon Marshall and or Alshon Jeffrey? If they try that, there's no way they're going to win this game. I was definitely keeping an eye on the active roster and who's up and who's down before that game to see if there was something I was going to have to try to pull as far as maybe tweeting you or texting you or going on to the blog and making sure, hey, everybody, I got to change my pick. I can't do it. I just can't do it. But they played, and they played well somehow, and Jay Cutler played well as we actually expected, and they pulled off, like, it was a miracle almost. It was crazy. And, you know, Colin Kaepernick, I tell you, once Coach Insane, once Jim Harbaugh gets fired, once the biggest fan of Kaepernick is finally let go, because Harbaugh's been in Kaepernick's corner all the way. He's his guy. He's riding or dying with Colin Kaepernick. He basically kicked Alex Smith off the team because Alex Smith got injured. And Kaepernick came in and played so well that Harbaugh said, okay, here's my guy, and Alex, you can go somewhere. Once Coach Insane is kicked off of that team, if they don't bring in, like, the greatest quarterback guru or something akin to that to walk Colin Kaepernick through, you know, mechanics and the basics, and it seems like he almost needs to be broken down and rebuilt back up again, that might be a lost cause. Because I don't really see, despite the three NFC title games in a row for the 49ers, I honestly still don't believe in Colin Kaepernick long-term as a Super Bowl winning type quarterback, kind of like Robert Griffin. He's very, very exciting as a football player, but I don't think he has that extra bit of pocket presence and quarterback skills to push him over the top.
Yeah, and you know, I haven't been high on the 49ers each of the last couple of seasons. There's definitely flaws in that team, especially in Kaepernick's game. Of course I was impressed with the Bears' performance on Sunday night. I knew this would happen. I mean, it's like, don't fuck with the Bear Whisperer.
I got it.
You know what we talked about last week after the infuriating loss that the Bears had against the Bills, and that you just kind of have to take the good with the bad with Jay Cutler? Is it, he'll lose you some games that you should have won, but he'll also win you some games that you had no business winning? There you go.
Sure. There it is.
I mean, if the either way you look at it, the Bears are exactly where they should be. They should be a 1-1 team right now because everything says that they should have beaten Buffalo and then lost to San Francisco, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they just had any average run-of-the-mill quarterback, they would have probably beaten the Bills because they wouldn't have thrown the stupid picks. But then they would have probably lost to San Francisco because they wouldn't have had somebody who could have made the plays that Cutler made. So they're right where they should be. They're a 1-1 team. They had no business going in there and winning the game. It's exactly why I said it would happen.
In other words, the Chicago Bears are who we thought they were.
That's right. I mean, it's weird the way it works sometimes. They had no business losing to Buffalo at all. They had that game won several times over, found a way to lose through some Jay Cutler threw some just hideous picks, and then comes back and plays that second half he played against San Francisco was right up there with some of the best quarterback play you've seen in a while. He was virtually flawless in that second half. In a tough environment, on the road, Brandon Marshall, the guy he was throwing all the touchdowns to, you could tell he was hobbling around.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
neither one of those guys are getting deep.
No.
Neither one of those guys were getting deep at all. That San Fran cover two defense was just bracketing them because they knew that they couldn't blow them over the top, and they were just shutting them down in the first half.
And that and their defense made plays. I mean, it was all the perfect ingredients for a big underdog win in prime time. And I know you've never been the biggest believer in my bear whispering, but I'll tell you what, it works.
I got to be coming around now after that one.
Well, the one where you did come around, and I want to give you some congratulations, is that you won a Chiefs pick.
Stunning.
Very stunning. Chiefs almost came back and spoiled that game for Denver.
Yeah, let me look through my notes here and try to see how the hell they did it, because that's one of the games I watched all the way. I watched the whole game there. Once again, what's up with Jamal Charles going down early with injury and Nile Davis coming in and just going off? I mean, Nile Davis apparently is the greatest handcuff running back in the history of fantasy football.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those situations where if you're going to have a number one guy who's injury prone, Jamal Charles has proven to be that, you got to have a good number two and not a guy who is number two. Much better. Every time Nile Davis gets you know, a significant amount of playing time, he impresses.
Here's another factor. Those Novocaine drives that Alex Smith puts together because he can't go bombs away and beat you with big plays over the top. So he has to dink and doink and just chip his way down the field on you, but Denver's defense allowed him to keep chipping his way down the field. I don't know exactly what the time of possession victory was for the Chiefs, but I promise you, I guarantee you, the Chiefs won time of possession big time in that game because they just kept possessing the football. And it was just, you know, what no matter what Denver's defense did, Kansas City found a way to just keep drives alive and keep pushing the ball down the field. And if they would have converted more touchdowns instead of field goals, they might have actually pulled off a win.
And Denver is one of those teams that I don't think has impressed me very much so far. They've won both of their games. I don't think they've done it very convincingly. And I wonder if a little bit of that mystique is wearing off, because I expected them to just absolutely annihilate Kansas City here. Put up 40, 44 points, no problem. And they didn't do it. And I don't seem to recall them having an overly impressive week one.
Well, it's very difficult. Another note that I wrote down, it's really hard to have your offense perform for Denver if Kansas City's pass rush and Kansas City's defense is going to be so rested from Kansas City's offense, you know, just running the clock and keeping the ball and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You could tell every time the Chiefs defense got back on the field, Tamba Hali and the rest of that defense was just excited and energized and rested, and they got after Peyton Manning, which is, of course, the only way you can beat Peyton Manning. That was pretty much the perfect recipe to beat the Broncos, and the Chiefs came up just short at the 1 yard line. The Denver defense finally held and stopped Kansas City from tying the game, but it did result in a cover for me. So I'll take that one of my five wins this week.
Yeah, it was a rough week all around. I mean, just the stupid picks that we had. They look stupid now, and of course we were just, oh, this would be a great week. Nothing was working.
We believed in Derek Carr. Ooh.
Oh man, we believed in Derek Carr. We believed in Jacksonville.
We thought that Aaron Rodgers and your Packers are just going to blow the Jets out of the water.
Well, it doesn't help when they snap they fumble the first snap of the game.
I wrote that down.
That doesn't help.
Rookie center Corey Lindsey, snap on the very first start.
And then they're down 21-3, like that. And then they still managed to come back all the way and clear the Jets by a touchdown. But, of course, it was a 7.5-point spread, so we have to take the loss on that one. If you take away that just horrific start that the Packers got off to, they completely outclassed the Jets, which is what you would have expected. But I don't think they were quite expecting that punch initially from the Jets. I think the Jets are an improved team. I mean, I have them as a playoff team, but they went they've played decent football both of the first 2 weeks so far.
You have to laugh at only the Jets having a situation where their offensive coordinator runs down the sideline and calls timeout right when they're throwing a game tying touchdown pass.
Yeah.
Then you also, at the same time, have to retch in your mouth thinking about the fact that the Packers just allowed Geno Smith to throw a game-tying touchdown pass that just happened to get called off by the timeout.
Yeah, well, that's not the Packers' defense isn't their strong suit.
Yeah, but this is Geno Smith.
I tell you,
what are you doing?
He's improving. I'm starting to regret that I drafted him so high in our Buster League. I'll tell you who I'm not upset that I drafted in our Buster League, Matt Cassel.
Wow.
I single-handedly won my Buster League matchup this last week because of the Matt Cassel performance. I believe it was 4 picks, and he took 6 sacks.
Wow.
And I came a yard away from him throwing a pick 6. So he almost put up 80 points for me in Buster play this last week.
That's another game. I watched all of it, and I wish I didn't. I want that 3 hours back.
Well, is that because you picked the Vikings?
No, it was because that was the local game that was on in my area. And New England's defense just tightened up a little bit. That's all it took. Of course, you know, we know that the Vikings got off to the 7-0 lead because of the Matt Asiata touchdown pass that he caught from Matt Cassel. Everyone's like, oh boy, oh, this is your Adrian Peterson replacement, and he's going to get off and going to have a big day, and the Patriots are going to go down. And then Cassel interception turns into 7. Another bad interception. the defense was able to relax and play with the lead at that point, because New England was able to establish the run after those bad interceptions and turnovers. Another turnover, a field goal blocked, a touchdown, 24-7, game over. And just like, what? What happened? It's, you know, it all happened so fast. But, yeah, it didn't take much. The defense tightened up just a little, and then Matt Cassel tightened up, and that was pretty much the end of Matt Cassel.
Well, you know, and I have to say, if there's a team that had so much negative preseason talk about them, specifically at the quarterback position, who's looked really good the first 2 weeks, it would be Buffalo.
Has EJ Manuel turned a corner?
EJ Manuel, I'll tell you what, I don't think he's turned a corner. I think he's just doing exactly what he needs to do to win games, and that's realize that he does have talented players around him. Fred Jackson and CJ Spiller, that's a highly underrated running back group. They don't get a lot of pub. Maybe because they're in Buffalo.
They get a lot of yards, I know that much.
Yeah, I mean, CJ Spiller gets that huge kickoff return for a touchdown. They're both extremely valuable, running the ball, catching the ball. Sammy Watkins had a great game, the rookie wideout. I think EJ Manuel's, he just plays within himself, doesn't just, I hate to say, manage the game. I really hate to say that, but Buffalo's got a decent defense, and that's two nice wins for them. I mean, they were gifted a win by the Bears. But sometimes being good is taking advantage of opportunities like that. Some teams would just find a way to lose those games, even if they're given all the chances. But then
some teams would have their assistant coach run down the sideline and call timeout and ruin their chances of a win.
Yeah. But I think everybody I know you had Buffalo, but I was extremely impressed with Miami beating New England the way they did in week one. And then they play Buffalo, and it's a completely different story.
Yeah, I was impressed with that as well, but it's still Miami's, passing protection scheme going against Buffalo's defense, and I just thought that was a bad matchup for them. So that's pretty much the only reason I picked Buffalo. I did not pick them for EJ Manuel, I promise you that. I watched Dallas and Tennessee because, of course, that's my local game. So Tony Romo now looks fine. Tony Romo's fine, folks. Just nothing to worry about, nothing to see here. Just keep moving along. He looks perfectly fine. He's not injured anymore. He has no mobility. I'll say that. He has absolutely no mobility right now. But thankfully for him, Tennessee knocked him down a few times with sacks and didn't follow up. They let him stay upright and drop back and hit some big passing plays and get comfortable. And then once you establish a lead, you're able to turn it over to your running game, and DeMarco Murray just completely went off on the Titans.
Yeah, I think DeMarco Murray is more valuable to that team than Tony Romo. I mean, I think if Dallas is going to have any success this year, which I don't think they're going to have a ton of, but if they're going to have any success, I think you're going to tie it directly to Murray, because they clearly have loaded up on that offensive line. He's running through some huge holes. And he's getting some really nice running lanes. And they have to exploit that. They have to keep that defense off the field. That's going to be one thing. The more, the less you see of the Dallas defense, the better, if you're Dallas.
Boy.
So they're going to need to, kind of ground and pound with Murray. And I think he's up to it. So he's got some durability issues, too.
Yes, he does.
So we'll see if he's up to that task. I hope so. He's my fantasy running back, but I don't. If that's going to all fall on Romo, I don't think things are going to go too well for them. But we both had Dallas. This was one of the few wins that we had together.
We did. We knew Jake Locker wasn't very good, and he proved himself in that respect.
Yeah, well, I think we also both knew that Dallas wasn't as bad as they looked the first week.
Well, we hoped.
It's funny because that tied in with San Francisco, because everybody thought that, San Francisco, they dominated Dallas. Well, no, Tony Romo played a really shitty game. I mean, he was throwing the ball to the double, triple-covered receivers, and San Francisco was making plays in that first half. I didn't see anything out of San Francisco in that game that impressed me, and that sort of informed my pick for that Sunday night game, and it came true.
Yep. Did you make anything at all of the San Diego Chargers receivers mouthing off a little bit after the game, claiming that they exposed Richard Sherman because they completed three passes against him?
No. No. I guess it wasn't just enough for them to win the game, but I think if anybody's earned some shots fired in their direction, it would be Sherman. If you're gonna dish it out and you're gonna talk everything, well, when when the other team comes in and beats you, then I guess you have to take it too. But I don't take a whole lot of that.
Sherman made the punk move. He didn't take it. He did not.
No,
speak to the
he
media
fired
after
back.
The game.
Yeah, he fired, and then he also tweeted, which seems to be sort of like the passive aggressive way to go out and
right
reach out now. That's just silly. No, first of all, having three balls completed your way in the whole game, that wasn't those touchdowns weren't that direction. But
no, they
weren't. You do have to go out on offense, and this is what the Packers did not do. You cannot just have a whole area, a whole quarter of the field unusable to your offense. You have to show the at least make somebody think that you could go that direction. Because if they're not even going to attempt to go that way, well, you can just load up on the whole rest of the field.
That's right. Well, that's what people have been doing. But it's so hard because Aaron Rodgers basically was playing with half a field. And as dynamic as Aaron Rodgers is, if you cut off half the field for him, he's half the quarterback, obviously. And Philip Rivers said, the hell with this. I'm playing with all the field, and I'm doing whatever I want. And look at that. San Diego gets the victory. Look who won the pony.
Yeah. I thought Seattle's going to be good for some clunkers on the road. They just are. They're not a perfect football team. They're a very good football team.
They're the best football team, but they're not perfect.
Right. No, nobody goes or nobody ever really goes undefeated. It hasn't happened in we haven't had a fully undefeated season in 42 years. So
yep.
Odds are that it won't odds are it won't be happening again this year.
The only one since then is having Randy Moss on your team, and Randy Moss isn't walking through that door.
No. And then that team still found a way to lose the Super Bowl.
To the great Eli Manning, only because somebody pinned a football to their helmet or something. We talked about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers earlier finding a way to lose their first two games of the season at home to backup quarterbacks Derek Anderson and Austin Davis. This week they're not playing a backup quarterback. Thursday night football, tomorrow night, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in an NFC South game go down to Hotlanta, and they play Matty Ice and the Atlanta Falcons. And public still not fully believing in the Falcons. To my surprise, Atlanta is only giving 6 at home against Tampa Bay. Jason, who you got?
Yeah, it feels like a gift. I think what happened was Atlanta went to Cincinnati and looked so bad, but I don't think it was that Atlanta was that bad as much as it was Cincinnati was that good. Atlanta at home on the fast track. I think that offense gets off this week. And I don't trust McClown. I don't trust anything. I don't trust anything going on in Tampa. They went and lost to St. Louis. Are you kidding me? No, give me Atlanta here by a touchdown at least.
I concur. It definitely seems like a give. They should win by double digits. What is Tampa offering on the offensive end to make you think they can hang with Matty Ice, even tired Matty Ice off of 3 days rest, off getting beat up on a road game? Roddy White is up with a hamstring, but it looks like he's Julio Jones hobbling around a little bit during the game Sunday, but it looks like he's going to go. Atlanta's got their weapons still. They're going to be at three-quarter speed, but everyone's at three-quarter speed on Thursday Night Football, which is the lesson we've learned over the last couple of years, is everyone's going to go in, beat up, half speed, three-quarter speed. So you have to lean with the home team most of the time in these situations, and I should have learned that lesson last Thursday night with the Ravens, but I'm not going to be stupid enough to repeat my mistake. I will take Atlanta to win 27-16. Tampa Bay looks like they're going to have their muscle hamster back, but I don't think that's going to really matter. They're going to be missing their stud defensive tackle, however, in Gerald McCoy, and I think that will make a huge difference. Atlanta should have a good game running for about 150 yards or so. It's going to do it for us on the live show. We will see you on the after show on the other side of this music. Now into our VIP after show portion of our program. We made it through an hour. I'm tired. You're sick. We're playing hurt, but we made it through. And now we have to repeat it tomorrow and do our whole week three picks.
We're sick and tired. That's what we are.
I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired.
That's right.
That could segue into a little Adrian Peterson talk, because that reminds me of what my parents used to say when I was younger. I'm sick and tired, and then here comes a switch or a belt or an extension cord or some other object. But beating your kid's okay, though, because we all got beat, so you know it should just be okay now.
Boy, this whole thing is everything with the NFL is just starting to get out of control with all of this now. You got Jonathan Dwyer tonight.
Domestic violence.
Came out. Yeah, I mean, these guys are all really picking bad times to start smacking up their women.
Well, that's part of the problem, is they've always smacked up their women. It's just getting a lot more press now than it usually does.
Well, and obviously the NFL has now switched to a guilty until proven innocent stance.
That's what happens when your sponsors start sending you, you know, threatening letters like, "We got our eye on you. You're making decisions like that and deciding to play it safe and pull your guys off the field instead of letting them go out there and deal with the consequences later."
It's all about the money.
That's it. It's all about the money. It's always all about the money.
That's it. Follow the money. And money right now is showing a little sign of being nervous. So all these guys, Greg Hardy, Adrian Peterson, Ray Rice, just, you know what, stay home. Don't even worry about it. Just stay home. We don't need you.
You got an issue with your headphones or your microphone or something there?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, you're sounding like an alien now all of a sudden after the live show.
Oh, nice.
And you're repeating. It's coming in double, and it's coming in really, really staticky. I don't know what happened. I don't think it's on my end.
At least we made a show without that happening.
Well, yeah, the little bit of research that I did trying to figure out what the hell is going on with our sound in all our shows before, the only thing I could really come up with was trying to keep my wife off of doing heavy internet stuff because we're on the same router.
Yeah, you might not want to be on that while we're on the show.
So I asked her specifically, no YouTubing and no, you know, video watching during our show, and that seemed to help because I have broken up at all in the show that you've heard?
No, maybe in the last 10 minutes of the show there we had a little bit of issue, but not much. It was a very clean show tonight as far as audio.
And it's so weird. You were completely clean until just now, and now you're sounding like an alien. I don't know what's going on with that.
Well, it'll be interesting to hear that on the show, because I'm just sitting here and on my laptop,
is your wife on the same router?
Yeah, she's asleep.
Oh, okay. Well, there's no. Your daughter might be surfing for something on the net that you don't know about.
No, the only person on the web right now is me.
Okay.
I'm not watching. Well, little did you know, I sit here and stream porno during the show.
Oh, boy.
No, I'm just kidding.
No, you're back to normal now. I don't know what that was. Maybe
I adjusted my position. I don't know. Maybe I was... Something was going on, but you know I'm real congested too. So,
no, it wasn't quite that.
Oh,
sorry. But the Adrian Peterson thing, God, it just makes me angry to hear so many people try to justify what he was doing because. This is now in the realm of disciplining a child and trying to what some people think is being a good parent. What he did to that child is basically about what Ray Rice did to his fiance in the elevator. No one's trying to defend Ray Rice except for the lunatics in Baltimore because they're just a bunch of sick fucks. So, but I understand that. You know, you love the jersey, you love the laundry, you love that purple jersey. You pledge allegiance to anybody in that jersey. Hell, you love Ray Lewis, so obviously you have no taste. So I actually understand that. But the Adrian Peterson defenders, I don't really get that. That's a 4-year-old child. He's got, you know, cuts and shit all over his legs just in his genitals. I mean, what in the world about disciplining a child involves marking up his genitals? That's just sick. That's just child abuse. It's just plain and simple. And the text messages that have come out concerning his attitude towards it, what he was texting back to the baby's mother, his you know, his nonchalant attitude, his, you know, well, I was just giving him a good whooping. I was really getting into that whooping I was giving him, and I felt bad for him, but hey, he brought it on himself, you know, that type of shit.
Yeah, he had it coming.
Yeah, that's just, you know, it's going to touch a nerve with me, especially because my dad beat the fuck out of me as a kid, and I still haven't forgiven him, and there's a part of me still to this day that if I had him alone in a room, I could do some shit to him. I really could. If you think disciplining a child, quote unquote, spanking slash beating, you know, whatever, it's the same thing. Spanking and beating is the same thing as far as I'm concerned. If you think that's a good way to raise a child, I don't know what to tell you, but, you know, there's a lot of people raising their hands saying, I was beaten, spanked, quote unquote, as a child, and I turned out just fine. To which I would respond, number one, no, you probably didn't. You may think you're fine, but you're probably fucked up. And number two, I'm going to raise my hand and say I was beaten as a kid, and I didn't turn out fine at all. I still have a lot of emotional issues. So we're even at one. Now what? You think you turned out fine. I know I didn't. So now what? You cannot possibly say that everyone that gets beaten as a child turns out fine. I would argue that most of them don't turn out fine if they're being honest with themselves. But since we're talking about football fans and football players, you know, we're into that macho arena where, you know, whatever's going on, I'm okay, I'm the best in the world. And as fans, we feel like we're the best in the world because we're fans of these larger-than-life guys. You know, it's all one big circle jerk as far as I'm concerned. I love football, but I love the sport. I don't necessarily love the big roided up, you know, juiced up monsters that bash each other's heads in. This is all about hero worship to me. There's really no reason to have Ray Rice jerseys or Adrian Peterson jerseys after all of this stuff has come out. After you found out that your hero is not your hero, after you found out he's not what you think he is, that should be the end of that, but it's not for so many people because they're so wrapped up in the culture of loving their hero and loving the men that wear the laundry that they fall in love with. And it's just, it's a little sick, quite frankly. It's such a societal touch point, and it's really, you know, the Roger Goodell witch hunt continues. It still feels like some, you know, some very powerful people are never going to be satisfied until he's no longer the commissioner of the NFL. I still, you know, believe he's never going to be fired, but I might be. It looks more and more like it's coming closer to that point. I don't know if it's over the edge yet, but it looks like it's not letting up anytime soon. But this isn't Roger Goodell's fault. This culture of beating women and beating children and shooting your wife in the parking lot and shooting, you know, and shooting yourself in the parking lot or what have you. I don't think Roger Goodell really has all that much to do with all of that. If you want to blame him, fine. You need somebody to blame. I understand that. But I think you need to take a look at the people actually perpetrating the crimes, and then you need to take a look at yourself if you're one of those that is throwing out excuses and reasons why those crimes are not that big a deal, or she hit him first, or she asked for it, or the kid asked for it, the 4-year-old kid, you know, asked for it, you know, because of course 4-year-olds should be completely perfectly behaved at all times and shouldn't do anything that warrants punishment. But I just think people need to wake up and stop blaming, you know, other people, other outside forces for some of the things that are going on with their heroes.
Yeah, it's almost like people have a hard time dealing with just the simple explanation. There's always got to be something bigger. There's got to be a conspiracy. There's got to be, you know, we always talk about this, the 24-hour media cycle has got to be justified. You can't just take each case, I guess, as isolated. Roger Goodell didn't make Adrian Peterson beat his kid, didn't make Ray Rice, you know, KTFO his fiance in an elevator, or make Greg Hardy or Jonathan Dwyer. Roger Goodell didn't make these guys do this. And I don't think Roger Goodell created a culture of making these guys do this. Each one of these guys individually should be accountable for what they did. They want to fire Roger Goodell. Great. Go ahead. Do it.
Now what?
What's going to change? Are guys going to stop beating their wives or beating their kids or doing drugs or blowing their heads off or doing it? Is that going to stop? You know, so, you know, Goodell, the best thing to happen to him could be he gets booted from this job, because the next guy is going to be under even more of a microscope.
Well, what do you think the next guy is going to be able to do? Goodell is supposed to be the hanging judge. Goodell's reputation was made off of being the guy that came in and cracked down on this behavior, and he's going to change the NFL because they're getting all this bad publicity. And how did that work out? What changed? The police blotter is still filling up with NFL players the moment the season ends, because they're a bunch of uncaged animals, you know, with that have lost their outlet to unleash their violence for 6 months, and they need something to take it out on, whether it's their kid, their wife, their girlfriend, or an innocent bystander. Goodell can't change that. There's absolutely nothing Goodell could do to change that. These are your football players. This is who they are. This is what it takes to be in the National Football League. You have to have a little bit of animal in you. You just do. And when you have some animal in you, things are going to happen. And it's up to you to decide whether you're going to believe in these guys as men, even though they're just football players, or if you're going to put more value in them than maybe should be put. No one should ever revel in Ray Lewis as a hero and somebody you should listen to for advice. That is a sorry motherfucker right there. That dude is one of the ultimate bad guys in sports in the last 20 years. And to see him up there proselytizing on NFL Network or ESPN, whoever he works for, it's ESPN actually, about the Ray Rice case, about anything really, to hear him trying to make points as if he actually has some sort of moral fiber it's laughable until you really think about it, and then it makes you want to vomit. Mike Ditka, you know, Captain Drunk, sitting up there going on about Ray Rice's earning potential being lost and how that's the real tragedy here. Why does anyone listen to a word that Mike Ditka says? Mike Ditka is a fucking idiot, and everyone should know that by now. But because he played football and then coached a Super Bowl winner, we have to treat him like he's still some sort of hero. You know, these guys are just guys, and some of them are really stupid guys. And even if they're not, they're still just guys. You cannot put this much value in them where you watch them knock somebody out in an elevator and still want to make excuses and say, well, you know, that's what happens. If Ray Rice wasn't a football player and you saw that video on your local news, you'd say, who's that thug and why is he knocking out that woman and I hope he's in jail? But because he puts on that laundry and plays for your city, oh, well, you know, she brought it on. She hit him first, or, you know, she might have mouthed off to him or spit in his face or did something to bring it on or justify it. It's disgusting. It's out of bounds. It's just wrong. The hero worship in this country is just wrong, and it really needs to stop.
Well, first of all, if Ray Rice wasn't a football player, if he wasn't a public figure at all, you would have never, and this still happened, you would have never seen that on the news at all.
Probably not.
And I'll tell you why. Because he's a black guy who hit a black woman.
So who cares, right?
So who cares? I mean, I'm not trying to be funny here. That would have never made any news at all, because that's just the way that the media reports the news. You never hear about, you know, black people beating up black people.
No.
Ever. Ever. You know, it never makes the news. Doesn't matter where you are.
No, unfortunately, that's not newsworthy.
No, I mean, it's just how the media operates. It's just a guy beating up his fiance in an elevator. I mean, I don't know even if they were both white, if it would have even made the news. I mean, it's one of those where it's domestic violence. I don't think every case of domestic violence makes the news. Maybe it should. Although God knows there's enough junk on the news right now. That if maybe some of this stuff was brought more into the light, but there's a lot of that stuff out there. And maybe it's good that this is kind of putting it in the conversation, because there is a lot of domestic violence out there. But man, is it making the NFL look bad right now?
It really is. The hero worship, though, is making them look bad as well to me. Brian Urlacher just walked away, apparently, from his commentating gig with Fox Sports 1. Is that not the most ludicrous thing you've ever heard, that Brian Urlacher had a commentating gig with Fox Sports 1? Brian Urlacher can barely put a sentence together. Why does he have a commentating gig in the first place?
Yeah, I'm not sure what stunning insight they were looking for from him.
I can't imagine. I really can't.
But that's just how it is, though. These guys retire, and that's – if they can't play football, I guess the only thing that they have left is to talk about it.
And that's
especially if you don't have a backup plan, you know, especially if you're not one of these guys who actually went to college to learn and also were very good at football.
Right.
You know, and you can actually leave the NFL and be successful in that next phase of your life. A lot of these guys just go straight to TV. They do it for a year or two, and you can tell the ones who are good at it and the ones who aren't. And the ones who aren't, who knows where they end up.
Well, I guess that's my issue, is that there's a lot of guys that leave their jobs with not much to do with their lives and walk around babbling to themselves and spouting nonsense because they just don't know what else to do. They don't get paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to get in front of cameras and do this for a living. You don't have to do this for these guys just because you watched them bash their heads in for 15 years in the NFL. That's what they chose to do. You don't have to put them up in your studio just because they killed themselves for your amusement. You can let them walk off and babble to themselves and do whatever they want to do. You do not have to worship them just because they put on a uniform. It's ridiculous in this country. And yet, here we are still watching football and sort of worshiping them anyway. That Thursday night number for CBS for that Steelers-Ravens game apparently was the biggest Thursday night number for CBS in like 8 years. So, you know, the that's kind of why I say Goodell, I don't think it's going to get fired, because the beat goes on. I mean, you know, the hits just keep on coming as far as the NFL. The money keeps coming in. And, you know, Anheuser-Busch can send all the threatening notes and emails and what have you that they send. But until they actually take that, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of business and actually walk away, I don't think there's really anything for the NFL to be scared of.
Well, and, you know, in the NFL actually, what will save the NFL ultimately is that it's a team sport. It's not an individual team sport like, let's say, basketball, where if you just had a rash of this going through the NBA, that would look – I mean, you have small rosters. I mean, if we had this much violence going on in the NBA, let's say, that would be legitimately damaging, because you'd have, you know, with the tiny rosters that they have, and even though it's a team game, they really do advertise more of the individual than they do the team. NFL is all about the team. It's all about that mentality of the team. You're not rooting for the player, you're rooting for the team. You're rooting for the logo on the helmet. Like you said,
yep.
The laundry, you know.
That's right.
And NFL more than any other sport has that sort of next man up mentality. Hey, you just lost your best player. Hey, well, where's the next guy? There's another guy who's going to come in, and it's always going to be that way. So if this can calm down for a little while, and then they can sort of do away with these guys who made all the bad mistakes, then they'll just be lumped in together during the, oh man, you remember back in, you know, 2014 when all those guys were beating their wives and beating their kids? Then you'll just remember it like that. You'll remember the guys. You won't remember the teams. Nobody's blaming the Minnesota Vikings for Adrian Peterson beating his kid.
Right.
So that's where you're going to, basically, I think the NFL is going to come out of this, but they got to stop having this every other day. Another guy is getting popped for this stuff.
The optics are terrible, that's for sure. And the NFL really is, yeah, like you say, is, you know, each team really is comprised the same way. Five or six guys out front that you kind of know who they are and you kind of recognize their faces, and 40 random black roided up freaks standing behind them all screaming into the air and howling and getting ready to go out to the field and kill somebody. They really are interchangeable, because you get rid of 10 of those violent thugs and the next year 10 more come in into training camp, and you know, and the cycle sort of repeats itself. That's why I say these guys are who they are. You can't blame necessarily the NFL for these guys being who they are, because that's who you have to be to make the NFL. That's why we watch. That's why it's the NFL. And that's why the culture, I don't think, is going to change, and I don't think Goodell really can do anything to change it.
Well, and we watch because we love the game.
We love these thugs. We love these roided-up freaks.
There's nothing
we wouldn't
else
have it any
there.
Other way.
There's nothing else out there like the NFL. And it's a great sport.
It's a great, terrible sport, absolutely.
That's right. But we have to spend 15, 20 minutes every week talking about police blotter now.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to we've everything with these headlines, it's become watching the pregame shows, it's like watching Nancy Grace now. It's terrible.
Oh, God.
I mean, it's horrible. I mean, I go on Yahoo today and look at the sports headlines for the NFL, the top five headlines had nothing to do with NFL football.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It was, and every single instance was a different guy who's in trouble for something. The fifth one was Wes Welker. His drug suspension got lifted. But it still still really had nothing to do with playing NFL football.
Right, it's still off the field shit.
Yeah. Absolutely, you know, and they need that to go away because it's a great game.
Well, it'll go away tomorrow night when the Buccaneers and the Falcons play, and it'll go away on Sunday when the games are happening and the ratings are sky high. And like I said, Anheuser-Busch isn't going away from that. They're not that crazy. They may be crazy, but they're not that crazy. They can send all the threatening letters they want. They're not leaving that behind.
Because I'll tell you what, there's a lot of other beer companies who'd be willing take on the NFL.
Absolutely. Coors is just waiting for you to give it up. Miller is just
for you. There'll be some public service announcements, and these guys will all get in trouble, but Adrian Peterson's not done in the NFL.
Oh, no, because he can still play. Ray Rice might be done in the NFL because he can't play anymore. But they're basically the same crimes. You're still taking advantage of somebody weaker just because you can. But Ray Rice is done because he can't really play football anymore.
Well, I'll tell you, I've spent the vast majority of this after show here on mute from hacking and wheezing and coughing. So I think it's time to call it a night.
That's absolutely understandable. All I need to know from you is, when is our next show?
Well, I know it's going to probably have to be tomorrow night, because I know you're out of commission Friday and Saturday.
That's true. I'm out of town. So tomorrow during the game, 9 o'clock, say?
9 o'clock should work. I do have a full work day tomorrow, but I should be home in time. I'll let you know if I'm not.
Uh-oh. 9 o'clock tentatively.
9 o'clock tentatively. You might have to filibuster if I'm delayed, but it would take an awful lot of delaying to not have me make a 9 o'clock show.
Okay. 9 o'clock Central Time, 10 o'clock Eastern Time, tentatively tomorrow, folks. NFL Week Number 3 picks coming right at you live right here, blogtalkradio.com/InMuchLessDetail. He's Jay playing hurt, and I appreciate it. I'm Dre playing tired, and I hope you guys appreciate that, and we will see you tomorrow night.